This is The Courier talking football. I'm Eric Nicholson, back from 2 weeks on holiday. I'd like to say I've been somewhere nice, but drinking Edinburgh in the middle of it, that was about as far as I got. And passing the holiday baton to Sean, and we're looking at, within the squad. I always prefer to go in within the squad rather than look outside for glamorous signings like Lee Wilkie and Jim McAnally. Craig Cairns joining myself and Mr. Spence. A
couple of right glamour boys here today.
Exactly. So we don't need to go for the big hitters. No offence, Craig, of course you're. Well, I'll stop digging myself in that hole, but you know.
Damned be fate. Brazier,
I know. Promoted from within.
I can't, this every week.
I can't exactly say you'll talk more sense than Lee Wilkie because yes, he's far, far bigger than you, Craig. But anyway. Listen, we've got plenty to chat about, and Craig has been, you've been covering a few Dundee press conferences. You've been at a couple of their games as well recently as well?
Yeah, more so than at the beginning of the season. I've seen a bit more of them in recent times, yeah.
But it's more what's happening off the pitch as much as on the pitch just now. I mean, we'll have to start with Dundee. There's we could spend the whole podcast on all the on and off field issues just now. I guess we have to. It's raining in Dundee, so I guess we'll have to start with the pitch, Jim. Do we work our way back and say that actually it was actually all right, wasn't it? It wasn't where you were at, Dens, for the game, for all that went on before and is going on after in terms of talking points as to games getting played, where they would get played, contingency plans, were they not contingency plans, covers, all this sort of stuff. It actually played okay, didn't it? And would I be right in saying that?
To be honest with you, Eric, I mean, as I was driving down to the ground, I heard Gavin Wallace from BBC Sports Sound team. He was interviewing Stuart Kettlewell, and Kettlewell was kind of, you know...
Which is one of the talking points of this.
Pretty scathing about things, you know. His fears over his player safety and all the rest of it. And when I got in, first guy I bumped into was Gav. You know, he'd gone to get a pie or something, so we're chewing the fat, and he said, "What do you think?" I said, "Well, you know, I'm kind of surprised. I hang on in the house to hear where it was going to go on. I was keeping an eye on pictures that Jordy Cran was putting on X, you know. But anyway, away I went down, and when I got, you know, you come up the kind of stairs, and there's the pitch kind of unfolding in front of you. I thought, that's no nearly as bad as I've seen it. I mean, a lot of sand down in the goal mouth at the, you know, the... what I still refer to as the TCK, yes. You know, that middle patch near the two technical areas was pretty bad as well, heavily kind of sanded and all the rest of it, but it wasn't as bad as I thought. And I actually thought the pitch played pretty well, all things considered, that there'd been the deluge, and they've got this obvious problem with the drainage, whether it's not draining away or what, I don't know. I mean, I was sitting with the former CEO, Harry McLean, during the game. I was asking Harry what's going on, because, you know, I mean, I'm kind of old enough to remember pre-undersoil heating days when Dens was among
probably
the finest officers in the country.
Probably,
you know?
Still around Harry McLean's days, it was still a good pitch.
It was, that's right.
I'm not saying he was out with a fork.
No, that's right. There are obvious issues which are, you know, no doubt we'll talk about that. They're going to have to address them, but it actually played not that badly. And to be honest with you, I thought it was, you know, football is a game of opinions. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good game. It was a kind of end-to-end game. Dundee played some great stuff. In the first half, they were excellent. They were a goal up, of course, at half-time. And with 20 minutes to go, they looked as though they were on easy street when McGowan added the second. And then, of course, it came to the collapse. But I actually thought the pitch played pretty well.
So given there was a lot of conspiracy theories, obviously, you know, about this game going ahead, no matter what.
Most of them, Eric, you know?
Yeah, you know, basically the referee was told this game gets played, come what may. But from your point of view, it proved to be the right decision to give it the go ahead.
I mean, I kind of leave the conspiracy stuff to David Icke and guys like that. You know,
he's still on the go.
He's still on the go. I watch him most nights. You know,
he wasn't speaking about Dens, was he? Or the SPFL?
No, I mean, was a good goalkeeper these days, apparently. You know,
Coventry.
That's right. No, but I mean, the nonsense.
These are the places we take you, Craig.
The kind of nonsense that you know that somehow or other the officials at the SPFL are telling the referee, this has got to go. You simply can't, in a modern world where you might end up with a kind of a delict action against, a damages action against you, you know, that's just not going to happen. That's a nonsense, you know. So the pitch was actually much more playable than I thought it would have been. There were parts where the ball stuck and all the rest of it, but it really wasn't that bad. And it was a really enjoyable game of football, I thought, you know.
Yeah, right, Craig. The sort of the background stuff and kind of, I suppose you could call it the fundamental stuff. You know, there's been a lot of column pieces before and after about Dundee's culpability, SPFL's culpability, what should have been done, what hasn't been done. Should there be punishments? You know, Stuart Kettwell kind of brought it to a head. He said in this, he's probably been the most open in terms of football people, if you want to call it that, people in the game, a manager, you know, another manager, another chairman, another owner, and basically saying, we, as in Motherwell, and I don't know if he said others, but basically Motherwell spent a lot of money on getting their pitch right. Dundee haven't, mm-hmm. and they've been able to reap the benefits in the summer transfer market, you know, when they're, you know, being able to pay bigger wages, attract players.
Yeah.
Does he have a point?
I mean, possibly, yes. I mean, I think it's much more nuanced than that. I can see where he's coming from. I don't think it's just a case of Dundee not spending any money on the pitch. I'm sure they have spent some, but what Kettlewell was alluding to as well is that Motherwell had issues with their... They were in Dundee's position a number of years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was basically the month wiped out, wasn't there, I think, and from memory.
They went from that to having one of the best surfaces in the country.
Yeah,
they
really still
did. Yeah, they really did, like, invest in it and stuff. So you could argue that Dundee are at that point. Now, I think where the reluctance at Dundee is that they want to move out and spend money elsewhere on something sustainable rather than... I mean, they don't just want to keep... This is just me speculating
here.
But I don't think they want to keep throwing money into the black hole is Dens Park, because...
You can see that in other parts of the ground as well as the pitch, you know.
And I think there's stuff that's definitely beyond what I know about culpability, with increased housing in the area over the years, and whether... the club or the council are culpable for certain parts of drainage and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's much more nuanced than that. But I can see where Kettlewell's coming from, because Dundee have got quite a healthy squad this season. But, yeah, I don't think it's just a matter... I don't think it's as simple as Dundee are a better team because they haven't spent money on their surface.
More complicated than that. Here's where... This is the bit I have more of a problem with is when... And we touched on this a few weeks ago, I think. It was maybe on the back. It was either on the back of the Rangers postponement, Jim, or the Saints postponement. And I don't think Tim Keyes helped matters with his little video piece through the week. They keep, as in Dundee, I don't think you can keep conflating these issues about it'll be... They're almost looking at it as a way to say, oh, but it backs up the whole idea of us for us going to this new stadium. And I'm sorry, I think you can't conflate these two issues. They have a duty to make their pitch as playable as you can make it. You know, without legislating for the weather. And I think for him to say, oh, it backs up our argument that we need to leave this ruinous place. Yeah. That doesn't stack up for me. I don't think that's a legitimate argument.
Well, no, it might well back their argument up, but I mean, there are all sorts of elements to that. I mean, you know, first and foremost is the fact that I'm as keen as the next guy to see Dundee having a good stadium.
Oh, man.
You know, in my heart of hearts, I would have preferred a refurbished Dens Park. We know that's not going to happen. That's unlikely to happen. But we also don't know whether Camperdown's going to happen either. I mean, I've written extensively in my column about this. I was talking to someone last week with a very, very solid knowledge of the planning process. Mm-hmm. This is at a very, very early stage yet.
And
I mean, there are many, many hurdles to go
through. And Jim, planners and councillors are not going to give two hoots about whether Dundee's current playing surface isn't very good, are they? They're going to be dealing with traffic, they're going to be dealing with infrastructure,
all the
rest of it.
Earlier on about conspiracy theories and all the rest. If you were being a conspiracy theorist, you would say that part of the kind of the plan here for Dundee is to put pressure on councils, you know, because councils can be notoriously difficult. But, I mean, I don't know if that area at Camperdown is... I mean, I doubt very much if it's zoned, for instance, for housing, for hotels, for a crematorium, all these sort of things. I mean, the roads issue, I don't even think the roads issue is a council issue. That'll be a roads issue for powers beyond local councils. So there are all sorts of issues here yet to be... Now, I mean, a lot of Dundee fans don't want to hear this, but a lot of Dundee fans have raised these exact concerns with me. So that's, in a sense, the new stadium thing is a complete distraction. Mm-hmm. It's a side issue. At the moment, Dundee play at Dens Park. That's the home of the Register mm-hmm. Football Club at Dens Park. And they have a duty of care to their players and the rest of the pitch, but they've got a duty to make sure that that pitch is in as decent a position as possible to play Premiership football on it. And at the moment, they've signally failed to do that, mm-hmm. given the fact they've lost, is it four games now they've lost this season? You know, and we don't know what's going to happen with the Rangers game as we sit here and speak on the Tuesday. So, you know, something needs to be done. And the problem is it looks like they're going to have to invest money. Now, that you know, this kind of reminds me of pals of mine that are in the old Victorian-style houses. They're beautiful. They've got loads of character, just like Dens, you know. But actually trying to heat them, trying to do anything, mm-hmm. trying to make any changes to them costs a fortune. And all you're doing is, frankly, you're throwing money into a big black hole. And I can understand why Dundee would feel like that.
There's a lot of things with football where you're throwing money into a black hole, aren't you? Aye. You don't get your money back.
You've no guarantee of anything in football. So it's a big issue. In terms of the punishment, I don't know what the SPFL rules are, bluntly, on ongoing postponements of games. I don't know whether there's a, you know, whether they have some kind of reasonable rule in there that they can kind of float about on and take decisions on almost on the hoof. I just don't know.
Four games postponed doesn't feel like that tipping point to me, you know, no matter how much the pitch might look and, you know, ugly on the eye or whatnot, or you think, and it's, let's face it, it's because Rangers are now involved and it's approaching the split.
Yeah, so that's what's changed here as well. I should add to what's been said already as well, Jim was saying the playing surface actually wasn't that bad in the end. It actually looked like it played better than it did between the teams in the opening day of the season when a corner of the pitch was still flooded and you could see the water skiting up when it was about, even for Theo Bear's goal, I believe.
Yeah.
Theo Bear? Theo Bear? I don't know why I just made him German.
Dutch. He's playing like a fantastic German or Dutch number nine. Not quite Van Basten, but he's getting close. And moving it forward, I think what I want to see and hear from Dundee now is, because I remember from covering Saints pitch issues this time last year, I know how problematic it is to there aren't many of the companies out there that can do the work that needs to be done, and you have to book a slot because I remember Gus McPherson, and I think it would probably be Stephen McLean, because this was around about the time that Callum got sacked, certainly Gus McPherson saying, like, it matters knowing if we're going to be in, you know, if we've kind of booked two slots. But not being in the playoff is a big deal because it gives you that extra time. Mm-hmm. So Dundee need to have already booked somebody in to do whatever work needs to be done. So it's not a case of waiting till the summer and then you hope for the best, or then you do some sort of, you know, surface work. You know, this, if it's anything substantial, it's going to be happening like as soon as the last ball gets kicked type thing, ideally. And Dundee are in a position that they know they're not going to be in a playoff, so it's, you know, they've got that in their favour. So if they've not got people lined up for the first week after the end of the season, then, you know, they should have.
And you know what, the law of economics kicks in here. It kicks in when there's a scarcity of any resource. The price to buy it or to rent it, whatever, goes up. And if there are very, very few companies with the specialisms to actually do this kind of work, and remember, you know, there are God knows how many professional football clubs right through the length and breadth of the UK. If you've got a limited number of people and they're in huge demand, that becomes a very expensive process to hire these people to do it. And it'll not be cheap anyhow. I mean, this is no case. We know the story now with the two Robertsons, the father and son, who left Dens Park after, I mean, Brian in particular, the senior groundsman, I think almost 40 years at Dens, you know. I'm glad to report that they both got other jobs, because I think we were all vexed at what happened to the two of them, you know. But that's actually not a job for a two-man team, I think, you know. I mean, the ongoing maintenance of a good pitch is one thing, but actually taking that pitch, it looks as though it's going to have to kind of be dug up, start from scratch, and there may be greater problems, you know. It may well be that drainage problems and all the rest of it. We just don't know.
If it's as fundamental as, Like Tony Docherty said, none of us are expert in this field, but if there are potential knock-on effects where Dundee is, where Dens Park is in terms of local authorities and the rest of it. So it is a big, big issue.
And I think it looks like it will rumble on to next season, because regardless of what's going to happen with the new stadium, the next part of that process is in August, where there's a hearing. So, I mean, that's, you're already into next season.
Dundee are going to be playing football at Dens for another two seasons minimum.
Yeah, unless you share somewhere in the interim. Well, I mean, that's definitely, that could be a possibility, that you share for a season or something like that. It's not unheard of that clubs have done that while building a new stadium in the past. But yeah, there's lots of hoops to jump through. Lots of, and this, if the weather continues as it is, we increase storms and things like that, then this is going to rumble into next season.
I think two seasons is a very, very generous estimate, at the very earliest. It could be three or four very easily before a spade
appeals.
If a spade ever hits the soil,
appeals.
The problem with discussing stuff like this, you know, I mean, there's a guy I really like at Dens, you know, but he's a great Dundee man, you know, and he's a fan who kind of thinks the media have got it in for the club and all the rest of it, you know, and that's what football.
There's a few
does.
Of those.
So even discussing something like this, people say they've got it in for, but no, you're trying to address the actual facts, you know. There are problems at both city stadiums. I mean, Tannadice has got major issues.
And
as
McDermott,
well,
you know, and McDermott, pitch, you know, McDermott's pitch. Pitch has
older,
been terrible.
Older stadiums do. Saints have got on the pitch. I mean, you forget that, you know, Saints have been at McDermott Park for what now? Going to start to cover the games for the BBC. They're just moving in. So is it 30 years now? 31 years they've been at McDermott. You know, I mean, football stadiums and football pitches have problems, and it costs lots of money to rectify them. And there's no way around this. There's no easy way around this for Dundee. They're going to have to spend money to seriously address the problem. And it may well be that they feel, well, they probably are throwing money down a big black cundy, as they used to call it, as we still call it in Dundee, but there's no way around it for them.
No, there is no way.
They're going to have to spend it. I mean, and it's actually a great pity, because they've got the best team they've had in years. You know, they're a good sight to watch. You know, apart from their occasional late collapses, they're a fine sight to watch. They play some good football. The crowds are picking up. They've got a home core, about 5,500.
Manager of the month for March. Unbeaten March led to a reward for Tony Docker.
That's right. I mean, there's loads of things going right on the pitch, apart from the actual pitch itself. Although, you know, I have to come back to it and say, I didn't think it was that bad on Saturday. You know, I'd heard the various. I mean, at one time in my keener days, I'd have driven down on the Friday to have a kick at it, have a look, but I'm not that keen anymore. You know?
Forget that, Jim.
What's the complaint here?
You used to fork the pitch. Come on.
It
looked better than that Clyde Park pitch, that's for sure.
So, they've got major issues, and they're going to have to address them in the close season, that's for sure, and it's going to cost them money.
I tell you, let's talk football, Craig. It is bubbling up very nicely, isn't it? The battle for the top six. I like it. I mean, we're not going into whether you like or don't like the split. There's no point. It's there.
It goes down to the last couple of games.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's more than two teams involved as well. Yeah. Like there is this time. It very often delivers a bit of extra sort of drama towards the end of the season. And yeah, I mean, Dundee, that collapse has cost them their place. It could have all been done and dusted.
Because I was getting my calculator out. And you know what does cost you? And we talk about it every season. If you get a hiding at Celtic or Rangers, it matters.
Yeah.
Because that goal difference now means Dundee need a point no matter what, don't they? A
couple of games against the Old Firm sides. I think there was the home one against Rangers earlier.
I mean,
it
sounds terrible,
well,
but that's why when I'm sitting there covering a game when Saints were playing there a few weeks ago, you think if you can just, you know, if you get out with a couple goal defeat, it sounds terrible, it's all right. You take it because you're looking around. You know, Saints are five or six goals better than off than Ross County. It matters for Dundee now because I think they'll get their point at Pittodrie. I don't think they'll get it against Rangers. I think they'll get at least a point at Pittodrie. But, you know, if they just lost 3-1, it would be a different sort of picture, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but I think all told this season there's been a lot of positives, and what I like about the negatives, if that makes sense, is they're easily definable.
Positive negatives, we like them.
Yeah, they're easy, a bit Rumsfeldy in that. They're easy to sort of work on, and they're easy to identify and therefore work on. So next season, Tony Docherty can make a whole plan for matches against the Old Firm where they are a bit more resolute and they don't get hide-ins like they did this season. And then they can work on, I don't know whether it's through transfers or coaching or whatever, they can work on being better towards the end of matches, because I think that's now 22 points they've lost from winning positions, which comes with it a lot of positives because you have to get into those positions to do that to lose the points in the first place. But yeah, I think it's, I mean, ideally you would have liked them to have learned that over the season and not to have dogged them going into the kind of latter part of the season. But yeah, it definitely seems something that needs to be addressed for next season.
I mean, when I was just following the games on Twitter on Saturday afternoon from a lounge, and you kind of assume it was just a, you know, Motherwell coming back. It's just one of those things, because I've seen it time and time again with Saints. Motherwell are because they did it so often, they are now the masters of the comeback. It's like the opposite of Dundee.
They're against Dundee early in the season.
They've just done it umpteen times now. Mm-hmm. They know how to do it. Yeah. It's habitual now.
Penalty was a joke, though.
Yeah, penalty was a joke, but we've long since, that's the handball rule. You know, we're not going to solve that. I agree. It's not a penalty. But it wasn't just a last 5 minute panic from Dundee, was it? It was a proper momentum shift. I mean, Theo Bear should have had three or four. So what sparked it, and what should, if anything, could Tony Dadoch? I mean, I see some I was reading reports and looking at Twitter comments. All of a sudden the midfield seemed to get overrun. Yeah. Your McCowans, who we love, your Lyle Camerons. When a tide turns, should they have been taken off? Should Dundee have been made themselves more robust in the middle of the pitch? They seemed to get outrun everywhere, didn't they? Out wide. Joe Shaughnessy looked his age. Donnelly got Theo Baird. The goalkeeper, don't know what the heck he was doing quite so far out as he was. There was more than one issue, wasn't there, in those last 15 minutes?
A combination of issues. I mean, it's a bit, I mean, I got a couple of, I was having a blather, obviously a lot of Dundee guys after the game, but got a couple of Motherwell lads up the road, you know, and they were delighted, obviously, but they were also, astonished at Dundee's late collapse. And I think one of them made the point to me that they thought Wee Tiffany going off made a difference. I mean, he didn't look happy to me when he went. Oh, you'd never want a player to be happy when he's.
What was the score when he went off?
I'm trying to remember, but he went off and he'd been playing really well. Now the problem is, you know, managers see their players in training. Managers see their players all the time. You never know whether players have had a wee kind of, whether there's been a wee something during the week, if the legs are maybe no there, if they've been looking a bit leggy in training or whatever. You just don't know. But he, you know, Tiffany went off. Who else went off on Saturday? It was Cameron. That was it. Cameron went off as well. And the midfield just seemed to collapse. So going from kind of... And Motherwell actually had greater possession during the course of the game. They're much better in the second half. I think it was 54-46 or something like that in terms of possession. But the midfield were suddenly just disappeared. So Motherwell were bossing the midfield. And then Bear up front was just... I mean, for the last 20 minutes, that central defensive trio were run ragged. I mean, shocking to say, kind of, you know, you say showing his age. I mean, they're not the quickest back three anyhow, you know, Portales, shocking to say, and Donnelly. But they'd played well. They'd played really, really well. And all of a sudden, you've got Bear kind of bringing it down, running at people, you know, physically bullying people as well, because he's a big, strong character. Yes. I mean, I can't believe there's substance in this fella.
No, I think.
It's just quite astonishing. I mean, I have to say, I watched him at McDermott Park and thought, there's boys in the juniors as good as this. He's just been absolutely remarkable.
Didn't look a footballer.
Transformation. Didn't look a footballer at all, you know. And all didn't of a sudden use, he's taking it, he's laying it off, he's holding people
didn't
off.
Use that physique you were talking about either. He looked like
stinking keepers and stuff.
He would be fearsome, but he wasn't.
So really for Dundee, because this sort of thing's happened before, it's how do you see games out? You know,
It's an art in itself.
There's a couple of ways you see games out. One is you maintain the pressure on the team you're up against high up the park so that they can't get out, but you make sure you've got enough cover and quick enough players to get back. That's where I think you miss an Owen Beck, perhaps. You know, I don't know, but failing that, you simply clear the lines. you simply clear the lines. You know, I mean, I think Bear at one stage, you know, I like young Donnelly. I usually got a blather on Saturday. His old man after the game.
You're always speaking to him.
To see him. He usually sits in front of me in his stand, you know. So I thought he kind of got caught with Bear and, you know, that central defensive position where he kind of went away in that run. But he was doing that for that last 20 minutes. I mean, you were absolutely right when you say a momentum shift. Because you could see it quite clearly happening. It wasn't as though Motherwell simply went to the park and scored three late goals in the last 20 minutes with breakaways. They were really coming in. They were coming on strong. They were bossing the midfield. They were giving the Dundee kind of back line.
You could hear it on the highlights. You could hear it with the fans.
And the midfield had just gone, you know. Yeah. You know, you and I think, probably have different views on Costello or Costello, as some people call him.
Costello.
You know? He kind of drifted about. I like the boy. I mean, I think he's got a bit about him. Silla had been terrific. And kind of all of a sudden, that whole midfield, Cameron goes off. All of a sudden, that midfield's kind of, for the last 20 minutes, are just almost non-existent as Motherwell, you know, take hold of the game. So it's an issue for Tony Docherty to in the remaining games of the season, to find out a way to thwart any last minute collapse. They're a young, you know, they're quite a young. Well, no, that's not strictly true. I mean, Donnelly's a young player. McCracken and Gore's a young keeper. I wouldn't hold too much against McCracken. I actually thought he'd some good saves in the day. Shocknessy is an experienced, a really experienced hand, but he's not got the legs anymore. So, you know, when you and me, we were sitting here last week, and Craig's place was, 2 weeks ago, was big Lee Wilkie. You know, the big man was never the quickest in the world, but he knew two things: one, how to clear the lines. Also physically, how to kind of deal with people, but how to deal the line, and how to be right side of people.
McAnally knew how to see a game out as well, to be fair.
Jimmy McAnally was here last week, and Jimmy absolutely knew how to see a game out, you know, and in terms of, you know, as a midfielder, he knew how to be in about people, not give people time on the ball and all the rest of it, to be close to people, no loose people. And there were a combination of things, I mean, that went on, and Dundee have got to get that right, because it was a spectacular collapse and it undid so much good work, because they'd played some really, really tidy stuff. But it just undid so much good work on the day. And psychologically, these games have got a big effect.
They do,
you know,
which
got a big effect on you.
Which brings us on to the next one. And I think I don't expect Dundee to get anything out of it, because the stakes are so high for Rangers. We've all seen Rangers and Celtic come to ground in this part of the world and other parts of the country when they need to win to get in them, and when they're in the thick of a title race, and very, very seldom do they not do what they need to do.
Yes,
For Dundee, Jim touched on there the psychological side of it. They want to come out of this at worst with one of those games that I was talking about, a 3-1 or something, you know.
Yeah, I agree, but I'd say stranger things have happened as well. I mean, they're
well, like your optimism. What are these? I mean, positive getting, negatives.
They'll get them right after an Old Firm game, so having to get themselves up for a different type of game where there's not as much hype. The surface could be a bit of a leveler, surface and conditions. And Dundee were pretty decent at Ibrox the last time they played. I mean, I know I said earlier that their record against the Old Firm has not been very good. They've had a couple of hammerings, but they took the lead at Ibrox. And, I can't remember exactly, but I'm sure there was something that went against them in that game as well.
There was a penalty.
Something like that. People will be shouting that.
It was a wreck.
I shouldn't be surprised that Rangers are getting a decision to get them back into a game at Ibrox. But they came out with quite a bit of. They could take a lot from that last game at Ibrox. So yeah, stranger things have happened. But Rangers are heavy favourites, but they also have that pressure of being able to go top of the league with winning, and there's a lot of players in that team that. Maybe haven't had that type of pressure much in their career, or haven't had it at Rangers. So yeah, it's a different test for Rangers as well. But yeah, 9 times out of 10, they probably win it. But maybe we might just get that 1 time out of 10 on Wednesday.
Yeah, the thing is as well, Jim, they don't have you shaking his head. I can think of a lot of teams who would actually, and Tony Docherty, he's not taking it on, and that's his right about the pitch. I can think of a lot of teams that wouldn't mind that pitch turn out the way it is. Dundee aren't one of them. You know, Dundee, he's right when he says they would want a good pitch. You know, they're not a team who I would say are suited to, if you'd said like play the conditions. Mm-hmm. Are they? Dundee are a team that play football, mm-hmm. and if anything, I think a pitch like that, Rangers will probably. I'm not saying they'll want it, you know, but you kind of know where I'm going with that.
Yeah,
Jim. It's not an advantage for Dundee. Let's put it that way.
It's not, but I mean, to be honest with you, you know, no one in Scottish football ever gets an advantage against the Old Firm. I'm not just talking about refereeing decisions, because while Old Firm fans tend to think that, you know, their great rivals get everything against them, the vast bulk of us think that when it comes to the Old Firm. That we get nothing, they get first dibs on everything, mm-hmm. and the rest of us get nothing. However, what that doesn't, I mean, like most people, I watched the Celtic Rangers game, the Rangers Celtic games at Ibrox on Sunday, and look, there's an inescapable truth. The two of them are in a different stratosphere from anyone else in Scottish football. They're just simply much, much better football teams than anything else. They hire because they can, with the money they've got, they hire much better footballers, they hire guys that are. You know, that are sharper, that wee bit fitter, that wee bit faster, quicker upstairs, quicker down below, everything, you know. So you're always at a disadvantage when you play them. And Rangers and Dundee will be at a disadvantage when they meet Rangers at Dens on Wednesday night. You know, you're up against a side that think quicker, move quicker, you know, everything in the locker is that wee bit better. And it would be, because they can pay guys 25 and 30 grand a week, mm-hmm. as opposed to a couple of grand a week, you know. So they're better sides. So you've got to try and find the advantages where you can. And the pitch, Jim, it could be one of them, but I don't think these Rangers boys will succumb to any kind of great psychological pressure. Guys at that level don't.
If I'm Tony Docherty, I don't think Dundee have got one of the bigger squads in terms of below Hearts and Hibs. They've got more depth than a lot of them. So, but I'm not saying he can afford to make a raft of changes, but I would certainly my focus would be on Aberdeen at the weekend. Yeah. And I would be, if there's any doubts, I would be taking three or four of the ones who could feel it in their legs, I'd be taking them out and say, forget this, we need to get our point at Pittodrie, we'll forget the Rangers one, and that is where my focus is. We've got this midweek game and take it. Take what happens. Hopefully it's not going to be a dull one, but all roads lead to Aberdeen.
I agree with what you're saying about the size of the squad there, because I think the way they've dealt with the injuries they've had this season, I think it wasn't too long ago he had 8 or 9 injured, and they've.
I think using his squad has been one of the best things that Tony Docherty's done this season, mm-hmm. keeping folk interested and freshening things up. And so no, carry on, Craig.
Put a good squad together in the first place. Added mm-hmm. well in January. I think all those things he has got right. But by the same token, I'm sure he made a few changes for Celtic Park. Mm-hmm. I think Boateng came in for Silla in mm-hmm. that game, and there was a couple others. And I mean, they were 3-0 down mm-hmm. fairly early on. So why? You have to be careful. I know that the goal difference is pretty much beyond them now. I mean, I think another doing's not going to affect
exactly.
that come the split. But, I mean, psychologically you don't want to be taking a hammer in before going into that mm-hmm. that final game. So yeah, to sum up, yes and no.
Good. clear as the mud on the Dens Park pitch. All right, Jim, I take it you weren't expecting... I didn't hear your podcast last week. Mm-hmm. Hands up. What were you predicting for Saints at Easter Road?
I didn't predict. I just said that, you know, they could, as I did in my column on Saturday, they could do their neighbours a big favour by winning. It was a great result for them. It was a great result. It didn't have stir the hibbies up, did it? You know, with Levine, you know. Yeah. No, it was a tremendous result. It's just, and it's given Saints that big lift. I mean, what, 4 points adrift now, or 4 points ahead mm-hmm. of Ross County. I mean, all in their own hands now. I mean, surely we'll get this over the line. You know, that's been their only aim this season.
Are you getting to that stage, saying it's a shoot? You think they're getting close to it now, do you? Ross County have got Rangers on Sunday.
I mean,
I think if they were to beat Kilmarnock on Saturday, I think 7 points would be enough.
Surely, you know, I mean, should they blow that? a 4 point. I don't think you should blow a 4 point advantage. I mean,
I think there's more substance to this, and you can see it in the way Craig Levein's speaking. I think he thinks there are foundations. That's not just a result that came out the blue and then they can't. I'm not saying they'll back it up with another win, but he feels there are big parts of his team now that he can rely upon.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about this last week, you know. I mean, Jimmy McInerney, obviously, Jimmy's one of the kind of grizzled veterans of the Scottish game. Jimmy knows everybody, and, you know, he's played at highest level, he's managed the whole bit. He knows all the movers and shakers. And the point he made about Levein, and we made this general last week, is there's no really, you know, take aside, because I know a lot of Saints fans are about boring football, it's not the sort of stuff we want to hear.
Levein ball.
You know, you're not going to get Barcelona at Dens Park. You're not going to get Barcelona at McDermott or Tannadice. You're not going to get at Easter Road, you know. I mean, you get what you can get with the kind of the quality of player you can hire. This is the Scottish Premiership, what we're talking about here. So in Levein, you've got an organiser. You've got a guy who can play the long game, but he's had to play the short game as well, and taking the squad of players and you know, and lifting them and organising them and all the rest. I mean, I think I said it early on when he got the job, Levein will be sitting down there, and, you know, just kind of watching from a distance, making his early judgments already in some of these players, who's got the right attitude, who looks fit, and all the rest of it. Fitness, frankly, is one of the least important things. You know, upstairs, mm-hmm. I think was the key thing for a lot of Saints boys this season. Not saying fitness wasn't important, but you've got the right guy to steer them through this really crucial period. Because the key thing for St Johnstone, as for any club in the Premiership, is not leaving it. Mm-hmm. You know, because when you get out of it, it's very, very tough to get back in. You know, it's not that you can't get back in. Dundee United, I think, will get back in. Raith Rovers, I would like to think, will also join them, you know, in the playoff. But it's very, very difficult. It's a difficult kind of league to escape, and it's a difficult league to psychologically deal with. It's a difficult league to attract good players to, and all of these things. So Saints need to stay in it. And I think with that four-point advantage at the moment, if they can stretch that to seven, you know, then I would have thought that then, you know, you can concentrate more on the Craig Levein will already be well into his rebuilding process. You deal with him on two or three days a week. I've dealt with him for years and years. He will have had long and weary now. He'll have had his kind of feelers out, his contacts about working, the phone going and all the rest of it, along with the recruitment folk at McDermott Park. They'll be already building for next season. It'll be a different Saints side, I think, next season. But he's got the cusp and the nucleus of what he knows he can trust. But the key thing now is he knows what he can trust to get them over the line this season. So I think Saints will be safe. I certainly hope they'll be safe. I think they'll be safe. They certainly wouldn't want to repeat this again, because the thing is, we've been so used to seeing Saints up the other mm-hmm. end of the table. You know, I mean,
conversations like the ones about Dundee, basically. And all the rest are they going to get top six? Are they not? You know, that's usually where that's been. This has been a
not an exhilarating season for them by any manner of means. It's been a season where they've seen how the other half live, in a sense. You know, I mean, there would have been a time where this wouldn't have been unusual for Saints, you know, but it's not something they want to repeat. But they're in good company, you know. Who would have thought that Aberdeen would have been struggling away just kind of 3 points ahead of them, at this stage, a side with infinitely bigger resources than St Johnstone have got, you know. So Levein, I think, will get them over the line. I'm pretty sure of that. I mean, he's up against, you know, I mean, Levein away, we pretty much know that. He's up against a manager, Don Cowie, mm-hmm. who was a fine player and all the rest of it, very, very inexperienced. And it's how you deal with the whole kind of the dressing room, not just on match days and the build up and how you deal with, how you coddle some players and how you chivvy others along and all the rest of it. And he's a master at that, you know. I mean, I'm not talking about how the style of football, none of that. I'm talking about the psychology of the game, and he's a master of that, you know.
Craig, you're a seasoned Craig Levein observer.
Yeah.
Is this playing out as you thought it would do when he took over at St Johnstone?
I can't remember exactly what I thought, but I don't think I was 100% confident given the time his time out the game and that where St Johnstone were.
At the bottom of the league.
What I was going to add was it's good to remember where they were when he came in, and all the things that Jim's described there is exactly what he was brought in to do. He wasn't going to have a summer window, so he needed to organise and get them scrapping to mm-hmm. get up the league, and he's on course to do that. And I know there's been a few times when it's looked like they could go on a slide, mm-hmm. but he's always pulled out a result when he's needed it, and this is the latest one. If he continues in the way he's doing, it's not been pretty, but he's going to keep St Johnstone in the league, and that's pretty much what he was brought in to do. I know it's still a long time, but they looked in a pretty desperate situation when he came in, and then he's judged more next season on the type of product he brings. And I mean, if he's in a relegation battle next season, then maybe you can start to criticise and things like that. But I think right now, he's pretty much done what he's been brought in to do. And I think looking at the, without seeing the full match, looking at the game at the weekend there.
You certainly wouldn't have been surprised at the fact that he won at Easter Road, would you?
Exactly, that he got a win at Easter Road. But it looked not too dissimilar to the setup at Aberdeen.
Yes.
When it was Kimbioka, just get Kimbioka in behind at any opportunity, sit in and then release the guy with pace, and they did that with Sidibe this time, and they got the rewards.
No, you're spot on with that. If you're wanting to, if you're Hibs and Aberdeen, you don't feel you're obliged to, and you're Nick Montgomery and whoever's, it was Neil Warnock at the time, they have an ego, they have a we're Aberdeen, we're Hibs about them, we're not going to change, so they keep playing their high line, and Levine now has weapons that he can use against that, and you're right, that is the and to an extent I suppose you could throw the Ross County away win into that as well. It was slightly different that Ross County made a bit of a defensive mistake for Kimpioka's goal, but again it was a turn defence into attack as quick as you can.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I guess it this isn't a Hibs or an Aberdeen podcast, particularly a Hibs podcast, but I would imagine Hibs, if there are any Hibs fans who are listening to this, would be screaming at Nick Montgomery not being able to change his tactics and continually doing the same thing, because, I mean, Craig Levein even spoke about it through the week, mm-hmm. about how they would get chances in this game because of how their opposition played. So there's a different question as to what it will be like for St Johnstone at home to Kilmarnock. If Kilmarnock come with a bit of an ego and think we're a much better team than St Johnstone, they are a better mm-hmm. team than St Johnstone, but Derek McInnes is a different type of manager. He'll not do the same.
A bit more wily. Yeah, I mean, and we should mention Sidibe as well. I mean, did you see that coming from him? Because he's followed.
I certainly saw. I liked him from day one. I liked him from, although we're talking about the game where Kimpioka scored up in Dingwall. That was Sidibe's debut, and he came off the bench. I like what he didn't look like a guy who'd come from English non-league. He looked like a guy who, I mean, that's his story, is he was coming over for a trial with, I think it was Preston. Mm-hmm. COVID right. hit, and so he had no option but to when COVID stopped, to kind of, he was over, and if he was staying in this country, he had to go into the Lancashire non-leagues. And all the things, he's physical, he's very quick, he's clearly not used to operating at this level in terms of what happened to him in Paisley, which was a really worrying thing mm-hmm. to see, when, you know, he just probably wasn't used to all that running and the energy that it took out of him. So, but in terms of being robust, the acrobatic goal he scored against Dundee, mm-hmm. he's showing a lot. Mm-hmm. He is showing a lot, and he's the type of player who, again, go back to you, Jim, you're a seasoned Craig Levein observer. You think of your Gomez's, you think of Prince Bowman's. Levein loves getting a player. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Webster. Yeah, he loves getting a player like that, a rough diamond. And I look at little things like the timing of his run. I mean, how often do we scream at strikers, talking about the goal against Hibs, about getting caught offside mm-hmm. when a team plays a high line and they're not aware of the positioning of the two centre-halves or a full-back? So Davey showed he had his head on the swivel. He knew he had his bearings. That was a big thing for me. You know, you look at, I watch Liverpool and I'm screaming at Nunes all the time getting caught offside. Nunes would have got caught offside with that pass that Matt Smith played through. As simple as that. And no, I like Kimpioka's. I don't think Kimpioka's not got the full all-round game that Sidibe's got. I think they're both, I think you could see it. You could see, they're different. They're both quick, but they're different type of players. They're different type of players. And I expect, listen, I'm not going to say Sidibe's going to do what Theo Bear did, you know, in terms of next season. But I still think, I would say Sidibe's got more of an all-round game than Theo Bear. But there we go. In terms of what I saw, and in the context of what Theo Bear's doing just now, I can give the man no higher praise. But I'm just looking at what, in terms of all the different qualities he's got,
yeah,
I think he ticks more boxes than Theo Bear. But there you go. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Well, I think the biggest box that a player like Sidibe can ever tick is that genuine lightning pace. To me, it's the greatest gift in the game. You know, there are lots of gifts in the game. Guys that read the game brilliantly, guys like Willie Mather, you know, going way back, that just kind of knew where to be. Weren't particularly quick, but knew where to be. You know, positional sense was great and all the rest of that. Big Dave Neary is the central defender, but we're talking a different kind of kettle of fish. We're talking about forward type players, and usually the great ones. And we're talking about the penalty kind of poachers, you know, penalty 6 yard boys. Talk about guys that kind of that have to take on the opposition and get away from people and all the rest of it. That pace, and you saw that with Sidibe, but also he's got a really calm mind. He took that goal beautifully. You know, I mean, it was a lovely pass for him. But
the one know, that they don't want, there's lots of time to think about it. You know, I've seen Chris Kane miss. No offence to Chris, he scored some big goals. But 1v1s are hard for strikers when they've got loads of time to think about
them. Particularly from the angle. It was actually quite a tight angle because he's borrowing in from the right. So the keeper's trying to cover, you know, his extremities to the right of himself, but also cover his near post. And it's quite a difficult one to squeeze in, particularly when the central defender is bearing down, because you never quite know. There's that fraction of a second where you have got to make your mind up, you know, am I pulling the trigger here, or have I got somebody who's actually also making the run inside me, you know, do I cut it back? And he probably knew at that stage, he's so quick, there's nobody to cut it back to, because nobody's going to keep pace with him. So it's a lovely measured quick stride, you know, not so much draw the keeper, there wasn't a lot of drawing to be done, the keeper was kind of pretty much fixed in terms of position, but it was a nicely finished, squeezed shot in, but it was a pace that took him away from his mark. I mean, you have to say the marking was dreadful. You know, the Hibs marking was dreadful, but you can only beat what you're up against. And I thought Sidibe did that. And between that and his goal the other week, the overhead kick, there's a lot to like about him. You know, there's a lot, but I think the pace, and pace allied with intelligence, I think is the key. You know, it's very well been, you know, very, very quick, but if you're a headless chicken with that quickness, that's no a lot of good. But it looks to me as though he's an intelligent player as well. And in that respect, use that old phrase, Saints look like they've won a watch. And they're winning that watch because Levine's brave enough to take a chance, to take a punt on a player that a lot of people wouldn't have taken a punt on. So I think, you know, it'll be very, very interesting to see how he does between now and the rest of the season, but mainly for next season, because he's a guy who can become a really important part of the side.
I think he's got levels. I think he's got levels to go up. Yeah, that's what I would say. Right, United, Craig. I mean, all of a sudden, that was a United of the first 2 or 3 months of the season type result and performance. And after a penalty was it saved or was it missed? I can't remember. It was saved.
It was saved. It was actually quite. It was almost very different. They were very good in the first half, but for 44 minutes couldn't get the ball in the net. They hit the bar, Louis Moult from the follow-up looked like he had done everything to just guide it into the net, and the keeper got up and tipped it away. He hit a really poor penalty. He then had another chance after that that he put over the bar from the edge of the box. United had the wind with them as well. So there was maybe that sort of a bit of mentality of, we need to score in the first half because what are the conditions going to be like in the second? But they were better with the wind against them. All told, they got the ball in the net many more times. But yeah, the performance was there, but it was almost very another one of those sort of like frustrating halves where they dominate and don't. And Queen's Park had one chance that kind of went into the side netting. They were dreadful on the day, Queen's Park, but again...
Which I didn't expect. Mm-hmm. I thought they...
Yeah, they have improved somewhat, yeah. But at 0-0, those type of things can happen. You can concede from the one chance that you concede in the half and things like that. I mean, we saw Inverness take the lead against Dundee United not that long ago in a half that Dundee United dominated. So it can happen. But no, and then they backed it up in the second half and absolutely blew them away. It was a very accomplished performance. There was no there was rarely any negatives to see. Everybody got pass marks. It was just a really good day at the office for everybody. He got five subs off the bench. It was a good day.
I like to see.
I sound like a United fan there. It was a good day.
Oh, good day, guys. I like to see when goals are spread around like that as well. So he should have a lot of confident players in his team now, Jim Good. And you need, I always think when it's a title race, you can't have arm wrestles and 1-0s and 2-1s every week. You need the odd game. Probably a lot of games would help, but you need the odd game where it just, you crew and you can, it's like, right, okay, everybody can relax now for 20 minutes. Done. And that was the perfect time for United to come on the back of the win over Wraith. Yeah. It feels, I don't want to get too carried away on their behalf, but, you know, they're going to get two or three more games like this. So if they can, well, have they got six left, United?
Well, they've got Morton, Airdrie, and Partick, four, is that right?
Yeah, I was going to say four because four, I think sorry. It was
finish against Partick and Tardis.
I think if they can, they've got confidence back in their team at just the right time and a wee bit of a swagger about them as well.
I think the Wraith game was an enormous psychological lift for them. I mean, people that get fed up hearing me yakking about football will get fed up hearing me yakking about the psychology of the game. It's, you know, probably I've got a good pal who was a sports psychologist at Celtic and Motherwell at one time. We talk every week about this, but I mean, I think the psychology of any sport is huge. Some players have got kind of great mental resilience. Some have got great kind of positive belief in themselves. Others are more fragile flowers. And that happens at any time. That happens even with the great teams, you know. I thought last week was serendipitous for United because the crowd, I'm not saying they were reading my column where I said the crowd need to
cheer,
not jeer, but they play their part. And they really did. The crowd at Tannadice last week were just magnificent. They stayed with the boys right through it. They didn't get on their backs. I was going to say when they could have, but actually there was nothing to get on their backs about because United took the game to Wraith. They took the bull by the horns last week at Tannadice, and it was a scintillating performance in terms of, you know, I don't mean in terms of kind of fabulous football, mm-hmm. although it was very good football. Everybody played their part. Everybody was absolutely up for it. It was, you know, full commitment. It wasn't a blood and snotters, as you used to say, but you know, it was certainly kind of plenty invigorating, kind of an invigorating approach from the players. And I think that win gave them an enormous lift. And I think to some extent it took the pressure off. Even though the gap at the top is still very tight, should Wraith win their game in hand, I think it probably brought back to United players what they were capable of. Mm-hmm. And so to go down to Hampden, and Queen's Park, actually a couple of times I've seen them this season have been quite tidy. You know, they knock it about well. The players that kind of nice touch football, play into space and all the rest of it. But man for man, United are a better football team. And I think, you know, I didn't say, I've only seen the kind of the highlights on Club Channel and that, but they just look like a team that are growing in confidence, that see the finish line hoving into view and know they can do it. I think they know they can do it. And I think, although they, you know, the Morton one will be a tough one on Friday night, and it'll not be very...
There will come a time, Jim, won't there? There will come, there'll be a game. There'll be, if Wraith, I mean, huge, I mean, you just cannot underestimate how important this Wraith game in hand is in terms of... You were speaking before we came on, Craig, about the psychology of it from a Wraith point of view, we're not having beaten Airdrie. So if they do that from their own point of view and from United's point of view, if Wraith are showing that they're on form, as well, broadly they are on form apart from the head-to-head, if they win this, you do still get a feeling there will be a game where United are properly tested and it might be where they don't expect it. And it's... I think United will win. I think they'll have a couple of games which will be just as comfortable, if not quite as, maybe not quite as comfortable in terms of the scoreline as Queen's Park. But one of these fixtures is going to give them a gut check again, isn't it?
It's too
wishful thinking on their behalf to think that they can do what they did to Queen's Park now.
I wouldn't predict it's going to be plain sailing between now and the end of the season, but I mean, a lot does depend on whether Raith do put the pressure on by beating Airdrie, and some people will already know that result by the by the time they listen to this.
If Raith even draw, it's over. You know, United are in not an easy straight.
And I think that Dundee United earlier in the season set the bar very high, and then a dip was always going to come. Now, I know that you can look at individual results and say it's never acceptable for Dundee United to be losing at home to Airdrie in the Championship and things like that. But I think all told, the dip that they had wasn't very bad. Assuming they kind of maintain form between now and the end of the season, I think the dip that they had, all told, wasn't very bad. I think what made it seem more... what made it seem worse than it was Raith keeping the pressure on, and that will have affected a couple of results as well. That would have put pressure on, more pressure on certain results, or to win games at home easily and things like that. So I still maintain overall that I think it's been a very, very good season for Dundee United, and yeah, a dip was always going to come. Sometimes you get invincibles, sometimes you get teams that maintain form all the way throughout the season, but it is quite rare. And I think that if you look when they dropped points, there'll still be ones in there, like the ones in Inverness and the mm-hmm. state they were in when they came to Tannadice, drawn at that point in the season, that's kind of unacceptable on an individual basis. But I think all told, the results broadly over the whole season have been very, very good.
I do think, last word on United, Jim, I do think it is important for them and it's important for Jim Goodwin that they finish the season like breaking the tape rather than staggering over the line mm-hmm. because, you know, if it was United and Raith, like two punched drunk boxers and neither of them really being very convincing mm-hmm. and they kind of stumble over the line, which is kind of what happened with Dundee. And then you got the conversation in the in the boardroom about
Gary Boyer, or
Gary Barlow, as you call him, Gary Boyer.
Barlow, that's right,
yeah. And Jim Goodwin doesn't want that to even have the fans talking about. Okay, the scenario where, Jim, you've done what we wanted you to do, but you know, let's. Have a conversation.
Jim might be having the same conversation with himself. Jim might be having the conversation. I mean, you know, we talk all the time about players wanting to advance themselves. Managers want to advance themselves as well. And while, you know, in a Scottish dimension, Dundee United are in the top six in the country, and by any measurable kind of yardstick or key performance indicators, if you want, you know, in terms of crowds and, you know, in terms of stadium and all the rest of it, they are... in British terms, well, I'm not talking about history of the club or anything like that, but in British terms, they're small beer, you know. So I'd have thought if you're a Jim Goodwin, you'd maybe want to manage Celtic, you know. That's not going to happen. But you might want to kind of get yourself down south for a biggish club down there. So it's important that from Jim, in terms of Jim's CV, that A, he takes United over the finishing line. It takes him over with a bit of spare, I think, mm-hmm. because that's good for his CV. It's good for his bargaining power in terms of kind of either if he fancies a new contract and if United fancy an extended contract for him. But it's also good for him in terms of bargaining power if he does think about going elsewhere. You know, I don't know. He might not fancy the challenges of next season, depending on the kind of budget he might be offered and all the rest of it. Because he might, you know, next season, depending on the situation with Mark Ogden, and these are all at the moment... indefinables, you know. How committed is Mark to the club? Well, we know he would like to be out, you know. He makes messages on that sometimes, but what will the budget be like? You know, can United expect to compete with a reinvigorated Aberdeen? You know, Dave Cormack will certainly kind of hire probably a high profile-ish type manager, you know. Not a Neil Warnock, somebody who's kind of got a bit more about him than Warnock, you know. There'll be a much bigger budget. Hibs will have a bigger budget. Hearts will have a bigger budget. You've got a renewed Kilmarnock, and don't wear the stuff about Kilmarnock having a small budget. They'll be, I know Billy Bowie's put big money in down there as well. So, you know, it could be a tough next season for United. So, you know, it might well be that Jim's sitting thinking, I get them over. It bangs my credibility up a bit further. And he might be looking to move to something... you know, which suits his particular philosophy, you know. So it's almost too easy to say, well, you know, will the manager get a new contract at the club? Maybe he's thinking differently. I don't know. I mean, I can't read Jim's mind, but he'll be an ambitious manager, and it may well be that he's thinking, I get them over the line. and I look elsewhere for a job commensurate with what I want from a football club.
Yeah, I think for both sides of it, it will be if they do it with a bit of, not necessarily style, but if they just do it with a bit of authority, mm-hmm. It puts them into the summer on the right note, and yeah. You know they can build. And he's done well. We've talked about his calm demeanour a lot over the course of the season. I think at the moment, the way he handled the build up to the Wraith game and the changes he made, a couple of them were obviously enforced. Those two young centre backs, and you know if you look at
it's changed the style a bit recently as well. He's asked them to go a bit more direct, and he wants them to get the ball forward and play there. He's asking his central defenders, probably because of the inexperience, just defend, and if a pass is not on, get the ball forward. Basically,
he's reacted to the Dunfermline game, hasn't he? And he needed to. He frankly needed to because if that continued along those roads, they weren't looking mm-hmm. like champions at that point, but. We need to, before we rush off, we need to mark, I know it's not mathematically done, but I feel like we should be marking our both passing from the league. What's your broad take from, did you feel there was a lot of gravity and inevitability that it would happen in the end, that they were a part-time team, that this would come? And that they would be, you know, that basically what goes up must come down in terms of Arbroath.
I think my suspicion is that their dalliance, and it's been five seasons now, with the championship, is probably over for a few seasons. I think, probably every club has a natural home.
It's going to go all Craig Levine in this.
They've got a natural home. And I'm not saying theirs is below the championship, but it's always going to be tough.
It's going to be floating between the two.
Yeah, it's always going to be tough for them to be in the championship as a part of maintaining that. You know, you get some great part-time players, and I often feel on any part-time side you've got four or five players that are every bit as good as
both of the best side. Of them, basically.
But it's harder and harder
cleaned
every
up
year.
In terms of part-time footballers.
It's harder and harder every year to identify them and all the rest of it. Lots of their players will be drawn from the West, and there's an issue with all that. But that's not unusual for some of the clubs on the East Coast part-time teams. There's been a good budget. I mean, I think Dick had a good budget, mm-hmm. and are both have paid well and all the rest of it. But they are up against clubs who traditionally have been full-time. Even Queen's Park this year were full-time, you know. So it's been a tough one for them. Managerially, it'll be interesting to see. I don't know what Jim McIntyre's saying. I mean, I like Jim. I think Jim's actually a decent manager, and he'll get the chance to rebuild and maybe have another stab at it next season, you know. I mean, mathematically, they're away, aren't they, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, it's you know, I mean, you need to be a kind of a Tesla to work this one out, you know. They've gone, you know. So, I mean, and I'm disappointed at that because it's a great club. They're good people down there. I know, you know, Mike Kerr, the chairman of the rest of you know, they're just good people. They're good football people. And I think I once wrote in my column that it's kind of Kipling, you know, they treat the two imposters of defeat and victory just the same. But it'll still hurt them to drop out, you know. But I suspect that they might be down. They'll be down and probably challenging, I think, to come back up.
Well, that's the thing. Depends who goes. I mean, the good news for them is Falkirk coming out. And you would look if, I think you and Smith, who used to work for us and, you know, does a lot of the Arbroath stuff, I'm sure you and tweeted, you know, they go down a far bigger club than they came up.
Yeah.
So the infrastructure at that level, you know, they should be in a better state than, say, an Alloa, dare I say, a Montrose.
When they were in the championship and they were a completely different club, obviously, when they went up. They went up through the playoffs from, I think they finished fourth in League One, went up through the playoffs. And did they end up not winning a game the entire season? I can't remember if they didn't win a game. And then they just fell and fell and fell. And it's an extreme example, but the infrastructure, it's night and day at Arbroath. So they won't be a team that goes down and just continues to fall. They will, they might not go down and challenge right away to come straight back up. But
they should.
They've got
a big infrastructure. I mean, they've got a sizable population. I've noticed a town of about 25,000 people.
You don't know. It's too early.
They've taken the crowds up substantially this season.
They've invested
in their investment.
taken steps while they've had it as well to make be more sustainable rather than it just be like a one-off thing. But yeah, I think you're right that relegation from the Championship would inevitably come at some point, and there's no shame in it for a club like Arbroath. And I think the takeaway from it all should just be like, what a hell of a ride, what a time they had.
Fantastic.
I just went, every club has its sort of sliding doors moment, and the whole nearly going up. That was their moment, wasn't it?
Not sure.
That was their history-defining moment.
From the bottom of the League Two, pretty much.
It was an incredible story, but I think they can, if they do it right, they should challenge again straight away. They don't want to take somebody else down with them. You know, they don't want an Inverness, an Ayr, a Queen's Park to go down with them. They want whoever is in the Championship playoff to stay up and hope that somebody like Hamilton doesn't sort themselves out, basically. And then they should absolutely contend to go up if there's not a big full-time team in that league, which doesn't look like there will be.
Yeah.
So
COVID would be the other one, but they're a mess at the moment. So yeah, they would have to do a lot of improvement to be challenging.
I think both are in that intriguing situation where they could. I mean, I agree with you. I don't think for a moment they'll go down and go into some kind of free fall. Everything is there for them to immediately. Mm-hmm. It's actually there for them to immediately bounce back as champions of League One. The danger is, you know, maintaining kind of the infrastructure and all the rest. And there's been new investment at the club. I think a lot of kind of people who used to invest have put money in again. The danger is kind of, would they then become a kind of yo-yo team? Up, down, up, down, up, down, you know? Because they've built that infrastructure, you know? They've built it over a period of four or five seasons now. I think there's a lot of good work going on at youth level as well. So, you know, from our perspective, we want to see, you know, the Tayside and the five clubs being up and doing well. But it'll be a kind of a regrouping situation for them. But there is absolutely no good reason why they shouldn't kind of storm through next season. But that, you know, they've got good people behind the club and all the rest of it. Depends how they do it managerially, the kind of signings they've got and all the rest of it. But, you know, all you can do is keep your fingers crossed.
Good stuff. Okay, well, thanks, guys, and thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week. Bye bye.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it, or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people to find Talking Football, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget too to pick up your copy of The Courier Monday to Saturday, or go to thecourier.co.uk/subscribe to find out how to get our award-winning sport, business and local journalism across Tayside and Fife in the way that's right for you. The Courier. Local matters.